News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
And welcome in Hour 3, Mobile Mornings. Fill up the Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106. A lot of local stuff to get to, also a lot of national stuff in the news. William Carroll coming into studio here in just a little bit. He'll be here this hour. This segment brought to you by Underdog Fantasy, and we are on a rocket ship towards the NBA playoffs right now. And your opportunity to win some money while watching sports with Underdog Fantasy. Underdog is one of the leading sports apps, and you can play in Alabama. I have been for quite a while now, and while the NBA is a whole lot of fun, they don't just have the NBA. They have PGA Tour, NHL, Major League Baseball, a lot of college sports. Pretty much, if there's a whistle and a ball or anything sports-related involved, it's on Underdog, and it's really easy to create your entry and get started here. All you need to do is choose whether a player will go higher or lower on one of their stats. For instance, in basketball, you're talking points, assists, rebounds. But you mix and match. You need at least two players to make an entry. You can mix up some leagues in there or just different teams in the same sport. And you can play with as little as $1. If you get it all right, you can win up to 1,000 times your money. So go ahead, download the Underdog app. Sign up now using the promo code Dalton. That's D-A-L-T-O-N. You'll unlock a special offer of up to $1,000 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit. Join in on the fun. Sign up with promo code Dalton. Claim that special offer. And once again, get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly with that first deposit. Must be 19 plus in Alabama and present in a state where Underdog operates. Terms apply. If you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or visit ncpgambling.org.
Anybody else out there getting a little dizzy following the tariffs and the war, tariff wars, and the I almost forgot about the other 80 to 100 countries. You know, I'm 90 days, I feel like we'll figure it all out. But China right now is, and then you got the stock market doing what it's doing, including going.
It's been a roller coaster.
Yeah, very high. 2 days ago, when Trump made the announcement on Truth Social that what his plans were,
yesterday it fell back.
And yeah, I didn't know that it was going to be that much of a, like you say, roller coaster. So just kind of hanging on. And I am not anxious to. And I hope that I decide I simply will not check my 401k. I think that's going to be my strategy. I mean, it's a long term thing anyway, but. I'm not going to check it and get into any kind of hysteria about all that, because I didn't check it for a while and was pleased to see where it was when I did. So I think I'm going to play that little mind game with myself and just leave it alone.
One of the problems with being a just your normal average everyday person.
That's not us.
So when there's people that are telling you the world is ending, but they're the only ones with the knowledge that the world is ending, you want to listen, right? And you, there's an anxiety there because there's someone whose entire life, or they'll let you think their entire life, has revolved around knowing the ins and outs of this game. And this game is world economics, finance around the world. And so you kind of naturally go to these experts to see what they're thinking and feeling. The problem is so many of them are compromised. And it's just kind of the way the job works. They become an expert in this or some of these other things, like, I don't know, pharmaceuticals we were talking about several years ago.
Yeah.
And they have an interest. Now, that's not to say that there aren't people that are very, very concerned about what's going on and from what they feel is a good place in their heart telling you, hey, things have to change. The president can't keep going down this road or the whole system will fall apart. But I always keep that in my mind now. Like, maybe your world will fall apart. Are we sure that we're driving off a cliff here? Or because there's so many panicked headlines, and people have been bloviating, including us, on this for well over a week now. But you look, and I did yesterday, at these Treasury yields that many people are very concerned about. Because the theory, and Scott Bessent had said this, the Treasury Secretary, that they want to get those yields down so that when they refinance $9 plus trillion in debt, they get lower interest rates, which would make a world of difference in what America, what the government owes. So those Treasury yields, though, as the stock market has done this roller coaster ride, the Treasury yields have gone up, which is not exactly what it seems the plan was. Usually, Treasuries would be a safe haven.
Yeah, right.
When equities are down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case right now. And one reason I saw behind that, and these are all theories and who the hell knows where I'm getting them. I'm looking at so many different sites and things and trying to read up that, well, China, as they're getting hit, they usually offload their treasuries, and there's usually many people that want to buy, especially if the market is going down. Mm-hmm. But with the treasury numbers going up, there's not as much of a market for what China holds right now. I don't know what all this means, but I looked at the 5-year, 10-year, and 30-year treasury yields, and pretty much most of last year they were higher than they are right now.
Right.
And I'm wondering, you know, okay, so why was the world not ending last year, but it is now? And I'm sure there's plenty of other issues at play, and how it is reacting alongside the stock market and many other things here. That's why it has people concerned. But I realize that I'm absolutely freaking out, or not, I wouldn't say absolutely freaking out, but concerned. I trust Trump. I trust Bessent. I believe he's one of the smartest minds out there. Trust a lot of the people on Trump's team. And going in, I knew something had to change, and I know China is a problem and will be a bigger problem the longer we let this go on, what has been happening, not this recent stuff. So what's the point? I mean, you look at your 401k or you look at your retirement and you look at your holdings and they're going down. Of course you're going to be concerned. But this is one of those things where, at least in my opinion, I go, let's just see what happens.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I mean, we're in the same room for 3 hours a day talking about the news, so obviously we have an idea where the other sits on these things. But it's interesting you talk about last year with the securities.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a story, right?
It wasn't a story that you were talking about around the water cooler, unless you work in finance.
So news is a narrative. News is the news that they promote. There's news everywhere.
Yeah.
There's stuff going on everywhere. There's wars being fought we never mention, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's terrible wars happening, never even make our 10 big things. So last year you're talking about situations where they could have made a big story out of securities. Well, it was a story. I suppose it wasn't a big story, not with us.
Mm-hmm.
And now this news narrative, it seems that the editors plug in things that play to the top stories. I'll give you an example. I was watching Newsmax yesterday, and they were talking about the juggling at the top of Trump's economic sphere, his team, right? And that Navarro has kind of played his way out of the lineup, apparently. This is what they were talking
This
about.
Is the narrative, right?
Yeah, the narrative was that Navarro he's gotten chopped down. He's, okay, you get over here. And Bessent has taken pretty much, he's the lead dog, which I could see that being the case. I don't know. And I switch over to Fox, and Jesse Waters is wrapping up an interview with a very boisterous and happy-go-lucky Peter Navarro.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I was on one channel and
he's out.
I thought he'd been beheaded.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go to another channel on Fox News, and Jesse Waters and he are just having this very, just kind of
they're happy.
They're like a couple of ball players after a game. They're doing swell. China's going to back down. Everything's going to be great. My job is going well. Jesse, thanks for asking. Good night.
Yeah. And with Peter Navarro, now he's sold in the media, and it's not true that he's the tariff guy and he's all about the tariffs, which is true. But more than anything, he is the anti-China guy. I mean, he's written several books, and he's an economist.
Some from prison.
He had 3 months in the county lockup there, which made him into a hardened man.
But
he's more, tariffs, yes, he wants to use those as a tool. But more than anything, Navarro has been sounding the horn on China and what they've been doing for, I want to say, at least 20 years. And he has been, I don't know if hawkish, I guess I will say, he's been one of the most hawkish people when it comes to China for a long time. So when they tell you that Navarro is out because he has some stupid tariff idea, I tend to believe the opposite. I think he is the one who maybe isn't leading the charge against China, but he's helping keep that in mind, that China has been screwing us over for a long time.
Yeah.
And he could just point to one of the, I think, three books at least he's written about the China problem.
Didn't we? So we went in the political time capsule. We went back to 1996, and it was...
So we had audio from Pelosi.
Yeah, Pelosi.
In 96.
Talking about China screwing us over.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder why in between then and now, I mean... That's a lot of years.
Yeah.
Why things weren't more actively done to curb China's advantages, and now we find ourselves in this spot, which is, I heard some numbers the other day about the what China produces and what we produce and the nations that we produce for and all that, and everything is just kind of gotten lopsided in the last 10 years.
Yeah, at least. And so I'd say there's some pretty big reasons likely for the change in mindset of a lot of the liberals who are so against China and pro-tariff and pro-bringing jobs back, like Pelosi mm-hmm. and Schumer, and the audio we played from Bernie Sanders from just 2008, where he was saying the same thing, that manufacturing has just gone away in many, many parts of the country. And I'd say probably, it wouldn't be out of bounds to say that China has made it worth it for them to change their opinion mm-hmm. in more than one way. I don't know whether, and I would tend to think there are some under-the-table deals there with some of these, especially the higher up they are on the political chain. But also it became advantageous to not do something like what Trump is doing now and upsetting the market. And it just became easier to... live with, I guess, a worse American manufacturing sector because those cheap goods from China were showing up, you know, every day at people's houses and businesses, and it just became easier and cheaper, and so they decided to let it run, not do anything about it.
What comes very easy is when that envelope keeps showing up at your inbox to say, hey, appreciate your stance on China. Here's this month's rent. Uh-huh. I mean, Washington D.C. has it's called the swamp for a reason. And again, when Trump got going in 2016, there weren't many Republicans that were for his arrival on the scene mm-hmm. at all. It was all Trump and the people behind Trump. He really didn't have much support at all in either party, Republican or Democrat.
Yeah, I would say so. And then now you see the Republicans getting in line. And how about that big bill, the framework yesterday?
Beautiful.
I mean, it's beautiful Trump and a lot of people out there. I know it's important to get it across, but I'm kind of like what Thomas Massey's saying. If we're trying to fix this spending problem.
Yeah.
Why aren't we fixing the spending problem?
In this bill, not necessarily, right? You got Doge doing their thing. You got deportation going on, so you do have things that are on the positive. I know you got to go.
Yeah, I'm going to run. Fill up that Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, and Councilman William Carroll from District 2 here in Mobile. Our guest beginning at 8:30. Weekend. Dr. Bill's got it at 2.0 on the weekend weather scale. 10 of you guessed 2.0. So congratulations for your victory, but it was tempered a bit by the fact that you tied with 9 others with the perfect guess. But Yeah, it should be great. Chocolate Festival this weekend, Strawberry Festival across the bay in Loxley, all going on. William Carroll from District 2, our Mobile City Councilman, he will be our guest beginning a little after 8:30 this morning. Let's go to the Mallory Piping text line. Dirt Digger says, talking about China, the Democrats were getting kickbacks under table deals from China. Probably not just the Democrats. Chinese are embedded in San Francisco. Pelosi is now from San Francisco. True enough. Rock and Roll Doctor says, it's really simple. The U.S. citizens, are you willing to lose all the goods China builds and ships to your local Walmart? Less choices for product in the short term. Talking about going on with the tariffs. Mommy Issue says, the real question is, how long can the average American living paycheck to paycheck make it? For seniors, some have losses so bad they are considering going back into the workforce. And unnamed texter, I'm not exactly sure what that says, so I'll just kind of leave that alone. The Mallory Piping text line is 251-343-0106. To Dan, no Dalton now. He loves his children, and they've got some sort of a performance going on at school, so he's there, and we'll hope he has a good time. He generally sends me some pictures from the event. Also, in the news this morning, we did have that story that the Jubilee, they've come to a compromise on that. Daphne State lawmaker Matt Simpson, he wanted to get a bill through that would address what goes on during a Jubilee. Do you need a license? Do you need to keep within a certain number after that dust-up with a gentleman and the members of the wildlife group, and there was an arrest made the last Jubilee that we had. He's trying to avoid that kind of situation again. Jubilees, as they came to be known among locals, occur, of course, when warm temperatures and low winds cause oxygen levels in the bottom of the bay to plummet, and it forces crabs and flounders and stingrays and shrimp and other fish to surface for more oxygen, and then you just kind of pick them up off the side of the bay. Now it looks like he filed that bill to no longer require saltwater fishing licenses for anyone between the ages of 16 and 65 who want to participate in a Jubilee. And it looks like turns out now it was just a conversation he had with some of the wildlife authorities, the Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. In fact, with the group that he had a conversation with, and it looks like they've come to a compromise, and so that's no longer going to be anything that's going to be dealt with via legislation. So you'll hear from time to time Matt Simpson on with Jeff Poor or with Sean Sullivan in the middle of the day. So you're familiar with him. He's a Republican out of Daphne. He filed that bill, but no longer is that going to be a bill that's going to have any life to it, because he said, we're good to go with just our conversations and our understanding of what's going to be the story going forward. So, yeah, good for Matt, and glad he got what he wanted. It looks like there's still going to be a regulation on how much you can grab and go with. Otherwise, you don't need a license to participate in a Jubilee. William Carroll, the councilman from District 2, is our guest coming up in minutes. If you have a question for him, feel free. Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106. Good morning from Dan minus Dalton, who's at his little girl's performance at school. Sitting in Dalton's chair now, he's the co-pilot of this half hour. It's Council 2 Councilman William Carroll from City of Mobile. Good morning, William.
Good morning to you and your citizens of the City of Mobile. Good morning to District 2.
Let me see why that's having trouble with that microphone now. There we go.
Good morning you again, and good morning to the citizens of the city of Mobile, and also to those of the city of Mobile. I'm excited to see or hear that Dalton's at his little girl's play this morning.
You know? You get to be in here.
Well, yeah, but I also grew up in that world. My daughter is a thespian, and she loves to sing, dance,
act. I met her at the Chili Cook-Off.
That's right. That's the one. She enjoys musical theater.
How old is she?
She's 17 now.
Yeah, she's a McGill?
Right, she's a McGill. She's a junior. And she also started about the age of, I want to say, 6 or 7 or 8, and she started at Sunnyside.
You know, there's something about kids that do that, because she's a very pretty girl, and she presented herself in a way like she knew how to do that. Like, you know, maybe being on stage helps with something like that.
She has an amazing personality.
She really
believe
does.
Me, she is a bubbly Miss Congeniality princess. I mean, you have to love her, man. And thank you for the compliment.
Oh, yeah. But it was good to see the Chili Cook-Off. That's one of those events, too, William, that I don't know. There's some, you know, I'm not just going to, we'll get to some brass tacks here, real issues. But there's some things that Mobile just does right. And like the Chili Cook-Off, in the current location, I think, is that's really been great. I think the way you, Canal Street to Washington Street,
right,
or something. But that's a winner. There's a number of events this weekend in the city of Mobile, but Mobile does events pretty well and well attended, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're really great at it. We say we're born to celebrate, but the Chili Cook-Off is an awesome event. You know, cancer sucks.
Yeah.
And so many of us are affected by it. My mother herself had cancer twice.
Mm.
And most people know the reason why I left the council the first time was because my mother was actually dying from the effects that cancer caused.
Wow.
Even though she was pronounced as a cure, the chemo and the process damaged so much that eventually she died of congested heart failure, congested lung failure, and everything else that was associated with curing the cancer.
You know, speaking of your mother, do you mind if we talk about her a little
bit?
So I didn't realize, I was talking to an old newspaper sage in this town, and he was like, oh, William Carroll, I knew him when he was 5, because you would bounce around with your mom. And explain who your mom was.
Well, I was fortunate enough to have a mother that has been involved with everything since the time she was 19. She attended Florida A&M, but immediately after that, she became involved in everything from civil rights to politics to, mm-hmm, everything else. I can't tell you the people I met with her growing up. She actually made the statement one time that she wanted me to be able to go everywhere from the Hit House to the White House. So in the city of Mobile, I can tell you, and especially in District 2, I don't think there's one Hit House that I have not been in. And to be honest, in 1990, I was afforded the opportunity to actually go into the White House.
Wow.
So, I mean,
It happened.
I have done everything that she had or wanted us to do. But growing up, I was so involved with the politics that she was in and the people that she was dealing with. She worked for John J. Spartman, Hal Heflin, Richard Gephardt. So it was just so much that we did in the process of growing up, and so many people that I was afforded the opportunity to meet and work with. And I could tell you stories about Don Siegelman and Bradley Burns and Judge Lionel L. Noonan. I knew all of them personally, just because of the fact that we all worked together at one point in time.
And that's something. So, and her, give an example of a position that she held.
For Sparkman, she became his aide here in Alabama after election in the Mobile office, and for Heflin, she kind of took over after that. But I would say for Heflin, she was more of an assistant to him here locally.
Okay.
A lot of clerical stuff, a lot of meetings, a lot of meet and greet, a lot of setup stuff here in Mobile.
So she'd be like by his side when he was in Mobile. She was right there.
Yeah, actually, I have a picture with her standing after Hurricane Frederick. I think it was Heflin on the grounds at Berkeley Field at that time, and also in the field at Texas Street Park, right in front of the house, where they're actually touring the damage after Frederick. That was 79.
So you were how old then?
9 years old. 10,
wow.
9, 10.
You still remember the damage and the effect that that hurricane had on this community?
Every day of my life. Mm. I can tell you what Dolphin Street and Gaifers and all the stores were like from Zogby all the way down the street, and then I can tell you what it was like the day after Frederick. and I can also explain to you the process and what it took to get from 1979 to 2025 in an entertainment district that we now have, and a lot of those buildings that were abandoned for years.
There's still some the number of abandoned buildings downtown that you know, that doesn't make things look any better, obviously. For the growth that we've had and the success that's, and I'm a big fan of downtown, there's still work to do.
And there's still a lot of work to do, even to the point that we have to come up with a way to either incentivize or a way to push people to either protect, secure, or at least beautify the outside of these buildings that are derelict and that are down there. We don't want to do something that puts people into a position where we're forcing them to sell or forcing fines or fees that are exorbitant on people. That would be cruel. But we have to do something to downtown to help that along, but especially in the abandoned buildings. But we don't have abandoned buildings. Buildings downtown, we have them all
everywhere.
Over the city.
Yeah.
So I think that in the time to come, we're going to have to take a look at what can be done that does not, one, criminalize the person or the people owning the property, and then two, doesn't put them in a position where we're forcing them to either sell it or get rid of it when they don't want to, when they're trying to raise the funds to come up with some type of plan.
That's your business, too. You're a contractor, you're a consultant, so that's your world.
This is my world. That's what I do, and you know, we're contractors. We do a whole lot of residential work, high-end residential work, and we do a lot of consulting on the pre-construction services on the commercial end, and we do a lot of pre-design work. I am a program manager also, where we help on the front-end designs of commercial buildings and projects and developments.
And I guess right now interest rates are driving the whole business, and you need a little help on those, right?
Oh, God, if we could get interest rates to come down a little bit, maybe we'll see a little bit more movement in the residential properties than what we're seeing, and we'll see a few people willing to build than what we've been seeing right now. Interest is higher than what we've been used to seeing, and I don't think we're going to see that 4.5%, 3% for a long time to come. In 2000, when we built the house on Broad Street, our interest rate was 6.38 or 6.5, you know, and a little bit of refinance and fix that, but at the time that was the
average.
Tough.
Yeah.
So we're back to those days again, and we can't let that deter our industry in the city, and we can't let that deter our growth.
Another thing that I love about Mobile, I moved here in 1995. You know my son Joseph, who
is
a big advocate.
He's my neighbor.
Mobile, yeah. And so when I came down to look at the job opportunity, I came down alone, and I really looked over the city pretty well, the three major corridors going downtown, you know, Spring Hill, Dauphin, Government, and then exploring downtown, which was still underperforming at that time, but you could see there was some effort there. I just liked something about the town. It hit me right. And one of the things I also enjoy and really love about Mobile, the festivals and all, the Senior Bowl thing was really great, and I'll get back to that in a minute. But one thing that is cool, if you think about it, you have all these restaurants and clubs downtown, but also you have this beautiful cathedral. I mean, that's such a contrast one to the other, you would think. You've got Cathedral Square, so this amazing, beautiful cathedral of worship, along with restaurants, bars, and all that. I just love that contrast. And Cathedral Park being used for so many different events. I came out at the Senior Bowl night. We had the concert before the Senior Bowl, the night before. My goodness. So I'm having dinner with the Joseph and Rachel at Debris, right there on Dauphin Street. Walk out. Well, I watched the party. The players come by, which was cool. I don't know if you saw that. We're there for that. They're just walking. There's Milrow from Alabama. I mean, pretty amazing. There's Arian Smith for Georgia, who I could have said, why did you drop 9 passes this year? But I did not. I wanted to be a...
I'm glad you didn't do that.
I'm wanted to be a good citizen of Mobile. Go back in, finish my meal, then walk out, catty corner to the Cathedral Park, big country music show going on. People all over the place, everybody that looks like everybody and anybody. It just was, I mean, that's, In its finest days, that's what Mobile does and downtown does.
Yeah, it's tremendous. But just a little history for you. You got to remember the founding of the city of Mobile and who founded it in the way that the city was built. They would actually have a central block, and the cathedrals were part of the centrality or the central points of the city, and the city would bloom out from the cathedral.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, and at one point in the city of Mobile, the only actual church was the Catholic Church in the center of the cathedral, and it didn't matter if you were Protestant, Baptist, or anybody else. I mean, people would just say, "I'm going to church,"
and that's where they went
to the cathedral, because that's where they went.
So there's a cornerstone on the cathedral, and I obviously redone all this. 1702.
That's right.
Think about that. 1702.
If you look back at the history dates, that's pretty close to the exact time of the founding of the city of Mobile. So, I mean, it puts us in an extremely special place. I mean, we have a rich Catholic history here, deep into the community, but we're also rich in other denominations, too, especially when you look at Stone Street downtown, too, which is one of the most historic churches in the minority community, and its life is probably the oldest Baptist church in the state of Alabama.
So much history.
So much history in the city of Mobile is a beautiful place
and
to be.
I don't know if it's always utilized. Yeah. I mean, Mobile as a tourist attraction or for people to come just to check out, we could probably utilize the history that we have a little bit better in terms of marketing.
You're right. I mean, I think that David Clark does a great job on the marketing, but there's just so much mm-hmm. here. And if you were not, if you didn't grow up or you were born in the city of Mobile, but even so, if you didn't grow up and were born downtown in the district, then you may not know a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of this you learn by walking around and actually playing in the neighborhood and finding the stuff as it goes.
You're right. Like walking in downtown Mobile, more to the north side of the Mobile, where we're more African American,
and that's right.
You see things, you see markers, you're able to take some things in. It's always very interesting.
Yeah, awesome.
Let's move to the modern day. Here we are today. You're District 2, which I didn't realize drifted so far north, all the way up to near Chickasaw, right?
Yes, it does.
Wow. But I think of you as a downtown guy. That's where I run into you. That's where you live.
Right.
Welcome to Callahan's. I'll have a Coors Light. But it's bigger than that, obviously. So you have what are the main concerns that people come to you about the district in which you are operating out of?
Well, the main concerns over the last 2 years have been, or even over the last 3 to 4 years, have been extreme affordable housing and revitalizing of neighborhoods that have been underserved. That's been a big push from a lot of people. The other thing is public safety, and the last has been quality of life issues, parks, sidewalks, and those things like that. Those have been my three biggest things. And as you know, we've addressed a lot of that, especially in sidewalks and parks and quality of life issues. We've done 4 major parks. I'm about to announce the Crawford Park renovations that we're pushing along with the splash pads and the park where we just put in new play structures and improvements to the bathrooms.
When you make these renovations at these parks, is it quickly recognized by the neighborhood and more people are turning out, more people are enjoying the parks? Does one go with the other?
Well, yes. I mean, we just had a film night at Crawford Park and some of the renovated portions of it, and it was absolutely packed out.
Wow.
It was great, and it was great to be able to provide that. I guess you were going to ask me about funding and where that money comes from.
Well, yes.
Each council person has a CIP, which is a capital improvement package mm-hmm. or plan. And you set priorities based on need and where those funds go and how they are to be used. And so far, I've assigned over, I want to say 3 years now, $1.8 million to Crawford Park, just over $1.2 million to Texas Street Park mm-hmm. and other parks. I have 80% of all parks in the city of Mobile are in District 2.
Really?
Yes, just about every park in the city is in District 2, other than municipal and MIMS and parks like that.
I would have never guessed that.
It's quite a responsibility.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to manage all of that with the little bit of funding you get. Each county council member gets the same amount of funding for their districts.
And you've got all the parts.
And I've got 80% of them. Hmm. So it takes a lot of careful management and planning to make sure that we can get enough funds to the places of priorities that are needed. What? And at the same time, I've got to address sidewalks. Mm-hmm. I've got to put into that plan also paving and what's going to be paved every other year, because 1 year is CIP, the next year is pay as you go. So there's a lot of planning that goes into that. So, matter of fact, I'm happy to announce Hannon and McGill streets around the Little Sisters of the Poor are going to be done this year. It's under contract. The drainage structures over there are going to be fixed under the street where it's been flooding for years. And they've been asking for that since 2005 when we first got there.
Another part of the city that I love. I love that area right there by Little Sisters. Oh. It's such a great midtown area.
Oh, it's awesome. And, you know, when we were kids, you know, Little Sisters wasn't that big. I don't know if you know that or
no.
not. Little Sisters was a little small building that was, the property was donated by the Tulin Sisters.
Wow.
And it was a little small piece there, but that was actually Hannon Park. Mm. And we played baseball there. If you look at the old maps, you'll see that it actually still says Hannon Park.
Well, there's enough space out there, I guess, where they have the festival in the fall. Is that
That's right.
Down? And so there's enough space out there, enough green space. Last thing before I let you go, what are your expectations for what the new arena and or Civic Center is going to do? Not for the city, well, for the city for one thing, but for your district, what is that going to mean, and what's going to come along with that build out that you're most excited about?
Well, hopefully, we're going to have the opportunity to get larger acts into the city and have them coming constantly, mm-hmm. Where we have not been able to attract them. They've been bypassing us for years now, going over to Pensacola because the way our arena was actually arranged and the seating was.
And the wharf as well. Because I came from music radio, and I spend so many of my weekends at the wharf or out of town.
Right. So hopefully we'll get those shows in, and we'll be also, from what I'm hearing, we're probably going to look at a little bit of hockey over there.
Mm-hmm.
But the ability to also host again Mardi Gras and Carnival and those things are going to happen there. But the other things that I see happening is because of the pavilion space outside and the way the streets are going to be set up, it gives us another area that's downtown that's long enough and wide enough to have those street festivals that we've been having that put us right out in the forefront of things. Now we'll be able to have a long stretch where we're not actually closing down the street,
right?
But we're actually having a festival in an area that everybody can enjoy. But as the other amenities come along with restaurants and the other developments there, it's going to really be a special place.
I don't know if you're familiar with what they've done in Atlanta with the Battery outside of the Braves, and that thing that I've been, but not for a baseball game, but I've been to the Battery.
It's awesome. You know,
it's amazing.
And hopefully someday we can do the same thing just right around the Civic Center. But we have to be conscious of one of our oldest historic districts that's right next to it. And that's Church Street East.
Yeah.
And we don't want any unintended consequence with the design of a new area that's going to affect them that may cause a little bit more noise or a little bit more traffic. We have to make sure that we protect that neighborhood at the same time.
Thanks for coming in, William Carroll.
Oh, no problem.
Appreciate it a bunch. And you don't want to announce anything here today. I was kind of...
I'm not going to announce anything, but everybody knows that I am running for re-election. We haven't jumped out in the street yet or gotten our campaign together. But let me say, it's been a pleasure serving District 2 for the last 3 years and going into this fourth year. Just the people, the environment, the needs. It's been a pleasure to be your public servant, and I look forward to continuing to serve the district.
Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Dalton today. He's with us watching his little girls involved in some performance at school this morning. Didn't get around to this. I have got one guest in, and without Dalton here, I wasn't able to kind of crane my neck around and check on the Mallory Piping text line, 251-343-0106. But there was a question we'll get around to it, I guess, eventually. Asked Mr. Carroll about Bayfest. If there's gonna, any plans to restart Bayfest? Of course, that was in downtown Mobile, right in William Carroll's district. He did have some sort of a contracting issue pop up on his phone, a work issue, so he had to go. But we appreciate his time and we thank him for his time. Also on the text line, what else do we have? Let's see if there's anything pertinent to what we're talking about right now. But back to talking about China, Bill Clinton should have never pushed to have China join the World Trade Organization. Check it out. It's true. That's why we in the shape with China that we're in right now. Well, I know a lot of things have happened over the past, from the 90s to today, that have left the conditions where they are right now, being in some cases very favorable for China. We'll see how long this game of chicken goes on with the tariffs. I have the feeling that neither party is going to have enough energy for this thing to go on, you know, much longer. But like you and like Dalton and like we've been saying with all of this since the very beginning of it, we'll just have to wait and see and hope that everything in the end works out fine. I thought Monday, or was it Tuesday, was a good sign when Trump did what he did, up the tariffs on China, and then put the 90-day pause on all the rest where those things could be negotiated down. I think that was a good thing. It's 8:59. Jeff Poor is on the way next.